Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome to the Football Digest podcast. I'm your host, Conor Brumby. I'm joined today by John Cross and Andy Dunn from Mirror Football. We've got a lot to digest today. It's an apt name. This morning, we're going to talk Manchester United, Liverpool, the FA Cup. I can see John's face is beaming wanting to talk about this Manchester United game before we came on air. He was already buzzing about it. We're also going to talk a little bit about the relegation at the bottom of the Premier League, which is hotting up very nicely. But John, I know you were at the game yesterday between Manchester United and Liverpool. Where does the game rank in your mind among all-time FA Cup classics? Because for me at home watching it on the telly, I was captivated. And I don't have a horse in that race. I'm not interested in Manchester United and Liverpool, but I was glued to the television watching it, so I can only imagine what it was like live.
Oh, it was fabulous. I've never heard Old Trafford so loud. I probably have, but it didn't feel like I ever have, really. Honestly, it was fabulous. And the atmosphere was cracking. I love the FA Cup for so many reasons. Anyone know that I sort of kind of almost write a love letter every time to the FA Cup. I love its history and its tradition. I love things like the fact that it allows extra away fans because that's part of the FA Cup rules. So you had 8,000 plus Liverpool fans in the away end. Fabulous, making a great noise. I thought it was absolutely crackling from start to finish. And what a game. It had so many twists and turns. How Liverpool didn't win it in the second half. And then United come up with the late equaliser. Rashford put a sitter sort of kind of to win it right at the death in 90 minutes. Elliott's just hit the post. And then twists and turns in extra time. Had absolutely everything. And I do think my previous favourite or the tie that I thought was the best ever was the Arsenal-Man United semi-final in 99. I think that the replay was just phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. What an intense game of football. It certainly didn't have as many goals, but had certainly drama and excitement. And I just thought this one, you know, had the lot and more goals. It was astonishing. You know, I spoke to someone earlier and they immediately said, but yeah, but what about the 79 FA Cup final? Not even close. Because it's 85 minutes of doldrum, basically. It was, you know, and then you look back at other finals. You've got the Gerrard final, maybe. And, I mean, I just think that yes, there's a pure cup finals, pure entertainment was just special. And I think there's been so much talk, frankly, over the past week or so about the scrapping of FA Cup replays in the third and fourth round, which has been on the table for ages. Honestly, it just felt to me that bringing it up last week was just another chance to kick my beloved FA Cup. It's not new. It was always going to happen because of the schedule. And that annoyed. What's new is that basically, you know, scrapping them is going to be tough on smaller clubs. You have to find a way around that for the new deal. That's another thing. But I do feel as if, you know, that was just another reason to kick the FA Cup, because I tell you what scrapping the FA Cup replays does at fifth, sixth and semi-final stage does for you means that both teams have to go for it. And I thought that produced a new level of excitement and entertainment. And I just thought, because of that, you got classics at Wolves, you got a classic at Chelsea, and you got the best of the lot at Old Trafford. What a game. Absolutely unforgettable. My favourite cup tie ever.
Andy, what did you make of Manchester United's performance? Because that first half, you know, you're listening at halftime to the pundits and they were pretty scared of Manchester United and almost how naive they were. But to turn it round, it showed character and it showed as well to me that the squad clearly is behind Erik ten Hag, because, you know, to pull that performance out shows that there's clearly positivity within that dressing room that we've maybe not seen enough this season.
Yeah, it was a mixed performance. You know, they certainly played as well as I've seen them play for the first 15 minutes of the game. And then Liverpool were in control, you know, and it wasn't actually a Liverpool side who were anywhere near their best in that FA Cup tie. I don't think Liverpool played particularly well, but were in control, and United found a way back in, you know, and Erik ten Hag's substitutes worked perfectly. You know, you couldn't, I'm not entirely sure it was a particularly structured plan, but it worked. Whatever he was trying to do worked, you know, with obviously the likes of Anthony Diallo and Harry Maguire, in fact, having a massive impact. Yes, it showed they're behind Ten Hag, but listen, it's also personal professional pride. You're playing Liverpool at home in front of a full house in the FA Cup quarterfinal with a place in the semi at stake. And Liverpool, to be honest with you, at 2-1, I thought were a little bit complacent, a little bit overconfident, and didn't put the game to bed and paid the penalty. You know, and made individual mistakes. You know, I mean, all credit to United for hunting Liverpool down. But there were individual mistakes. Nunes gives the ball away for the Rashford equaliser, and Elliot clearly makes a mistake for the Diallo winner. So yes, it does show that they are, you know, they're not down in tools, but then you wouldn't expect them to. It's Manchester United, it's Old Trafford, it's Liverpool, it's the FA Cup, no matter who's in charge. It does give Ten Hag, though, a much needed boost. You know, let's face it, the noise over the last few weeks is that, you know, listen, he's probably going to go in the summer. That seems to be, since Ratcliffe took over, hasn't made that big endorsement of Ten Hag. And, you know, the defeat at home to Fulham, the lesson they were given at the Etihad, all points to the fact that there might be a change. Listen, I'm not saying this performance and results is going to keep him in his job, because don't forget, Louis van Gaal went on and won the whole thing and still got sacked. So, you know, there's no reason why we should think that this is going to be an absolute game changer for Ten Hag. But he deserved it. You know, he made the bold change, deserved it. Just going back to the original one, though, I'm glad in passing Crossy mentioned it, because when people say to me, you know, you were there yesterday, you know, an all-time FA Cup classic. Yes, but I'm not sure it was the best FA Cup game of the weekend. Never mind in history. The lads are saying in history, I'm reading all this. That's what you call big club bias. It's Man United, Liverpool. Arguably, and I was at both games, Wolves Coventry was an even more remarkable game. I mean, how many games you see where a team comes back to in the 83rd, 4th and 88th minutes to be winning 2-1, and then the team from a lower division, and don't forget that's what the FA Cup is all about, is a team like Coventry who've gone down, who are now a rung below, who've had issues in the past, who've struggled off the pitch, and then coming back against a Premier League team, the all-conquering Premier League, and then scored in the 97th and 100th minute. Now, as I say, was Man United Liverpool one of the all-time classics? Maybe. But might not even been the best game of the weekend in the FA Cup. And that's brilliant, isn't it? That's a great story, Wolves. But that's what I'm saying. And I agree with everything Crossy said. That's why, you know, this was the shot in the arm, the FA Cup. The FA Cup needed, quite frankly, because, you know, it's easy to view it as a competition under siege. And when it produces, when it produces stuff like that, it's just fantastic. And Coventry being in there is wonderful because, you know, don't forget, we are seeing, okay, Leicester apart 3 years ago, we are now seeing, you know, the domination of the elite teams in the FA Cup. You know, yeah, it hasn't really changed much, but, you know, it's nice to see someone like Coventry in there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you think we'll talk a little bit more about the sort of the strength of the FA Cup? Because I want to talk about how sort of I feel like this weekend's revitalized the FA Cup. Because if your team's not in it, you know, normally you maybe have a passing eye on it. But, you know, this weekend it really has caught everyone's attention. But I just want to talk a little bit about Liverpool before we go on that. So, John, were you surprised how poor Liverpool were yesterday? Because there's been so much talk of the quadruple, hasn't there? There's been so much talk of them, you know, going to have that final game for Klopp at Wembley where he wins the FA Cup, you know, and holds a trophy in the fairy tale ending and all the storyline and the pomp that we've got around that. Were you surprised at how poor they were in terms of the clinicalness of the final third? The amount of times they broke through, and I remember there was one where Gakpo was running down the middle and he played a poor ball to Harvey Elliott and nothing came from it. So many times where they had the chance to kill Manchester United, and we've seen Liverpool a million times in these situations kill teams. We've seen them at Old Trafford do it where they go on and really batter a team. Yesterday, though, they just didn't have that edge.
No, I tell you what, Colin, it was quite funny, actually. Walking away from the Old Trafford press room yesterday, I sort of ran into a member of the press who may or may not have Liverpool allegiances. And I said to him, my God, what a game that was. Absolute all-time classic. And he said, it was a terrible game. Terrible. So lacking in quality. And the thing about it is, yeah, fundamentally, he's absolutely right. I mean, I'm not sure quite where he's coming from, suspect. But basically, it was just, I mean, he's spot on because the total and utter lack of quality from both sides. It was definitely, you know, next goal wins. That crazy madcap, bad defending, bad finishing. But yeah, you're absolutely right. So there was a really good spell, I thought, for Liverpool at the end of the first half, 15 minutes when they were brilliant and basically scored twice, took the lead. Whole of the second half, I just thought break after break. There was one in particular where I think Nunes is way on the left. It was so obvious, the ball to Elliott. Klopp screaming at him to play it and basically still didn't find him. And basically Klopp went mad afterwards. Onana made super saves, brilliant blocks. Liverpool had so many chances to win it in 90 minutes. And, you know, it's astonishing that they didn't wrap it up 3-4-1, frankly, because they normally do. But Liverpool were poor in particular areas, weren't ruthless enough. I thought taking off Salah was a changing point. A real turning point. I thought they lost their attacking impetus from then. And, you know, it certainly lacked. I mean, I thought McAllister played well, you see, and there's certain individual good performances. So you know, Kwanzaa was brilliant. And, you know, and so you can't knock them too much. But basically, did they come together as a team? You know, should they have won it? No. And, I have to say, as a unit, that worries me about the tiredness in the legs. Because Thursday night, Sunday, it's going to be the rest story of their season. And basically, I thought ultimately maybe it had a big influence, big factor as to why they lost at Old Trafford, to be honest.
Do you think, Andy, towards the end of the... Well, it was 2-1 Liverpool in the 90 minutes. Do you think Liverpool were a little bit almost, maybe not arrogant, but complacent in their play? Because to me, it looked like they were slowing the ball down. It felt like they were in such control. There was no fear that Manchester United were going to come back into the game. And I thought it was strange to see a Jurgen Klopp side sort of play with that lethargy, which you don't normally expect.
Yeah, and that might have something to do with what John said. You know, they had, bear in mind, although it was an easy game, they had played on the Thursday night, and it's that build-up of games as well, I think, that has probably caught up with them. We shouldn't forget, you know, Klopp explained quite well after the game, you know, the intensity of the run of games they've been on with so many injuries. And that combination, you know, might take its toll. But yes, I agree. And as I said that earlier, and I said that in the immediate aftermath of the game, I did think that a 2-1 Liverpool, bizarrely, almost looked as though they were in a comfort zone, that they thought the 2-1 anyway would be fine, that the United were particularly... I mean, Klopp said, you know, we knew they would always have a chance to score. Well, quite frankly, during that spell when Liverpool, you know, for 20 minutes of the second half, United never looked like scoring. They really didn't look like scoring. Anthony's equaliser, let's face it, came right out of the blue. So, yes, I do think there was elements of that, you know. So I also think that, you know, we shouldn't be too harsh on Liverpool. They weren't very good yesterday, but, you know, they've had a really tough run of games, you know, and with the amount of injuries they've had, if you looked at those run of fixtures and said these are the results you would have got, you probably would have, you know, given them a lot of credit. So yeah, I wouldn't be too. So they've got the break now. They've got, you wouldn't say a kind Europa League draw, because you can't have a kind draw when you're down to the quarterfinals. But they've got a draw they should be able to navigate, and I think they'll be fine. Again, in the Mo Salah situation, I agree with John that him coming off was a slight surprise. I didn't think he did particularly well. He scored the goal. I thought he didn't look as sharp as normal. And I think he's still getting back to match fitness. And if he has, you know, if he rests up during the international break, then, which I suspect he will, he'd be sharper and Liverpool will be just fine and ready to go. I think the international break is coming at a good time for him, let's put it that way.
Yeah, let's switch now and talk about some of the other FA Cup games. John, Chelsea were playing Leicester, 2-0 up, scored a disastrous one, possibly one of the worst own goals I've ever seen, put a 2-1, then Leicester get back 2-2. Leicester then go down to 10 men, Raheem Sterling blasts a free kick a million yards over the bar, gets booed off the pitch. It was an interesting game. Chelsea in the end winning 4-2, though. Pochettino must be feeling relieved, because there's been a lot of sort of pressure building there, hasn't there, sort of all season. But they've got a really good chance again. You know, they're at Wembley. They've got a chance of winning a trophy this season after losing the Carabao Cup final last month.
When you say really good chance, I'd say they've got a chance. No, listen, they've beaten City once and sort of drawn at the Etihad. So, you know, you can't write them off. And it's their season on the line, right? So, you know, it has to be. I mean, honestly, I do feel sorry for Sterling. He can't do right for doing wrong. I got in from Old Trafford last night to catch the end of Match of the Day, and they were analysing his performance, which was basically Theo Walcott saying everything he does instinctively is brilliant, and whenever he has time to think about things, he gets it wrong. And basically, I just feel that that's being exaggerated at the moment in his play because he's short of confidence. You know, I think Theo Walcott is absolutely spot on with his analysis, and it feels like a bit of a, you know, I mean, it's negative swirling around for him, Sterling. It's difficult for him at the moment, and basically he keeps going, which is credit to him. Cole Palmer is fantastic, and they make terrible defensive mistakes. They're all over the shop. You never quite know which Chelsea are going to turn up, and then afterwards you get Pochettino, you know, ranting and raving about kind of the fans, basically, and, you know, did it in a nice way, in a sort of a subtle way. But I thought the message was clear, basically, get behind us, stick behind us. We need it. We need you. And then basically trying to sort of rally the troops. It's just crazy. But I have to say, it all points to me that this is Chelsea's last chance saloon for this season. And basically, I think probably Pochettino goes in the summer. It feels increasingly like that. It's just not working. I think, you know, I think it's madcap. I think he's not been given a proper chance in a way, because it probably takes two or three more years of rebuild, to be honest, before anyone can get it right. So, you know, I'm not sure anyone could get it right at the moment. It just feels toxic. And the fact is that he's a former Spurs manager, probably doesn't help in the end, in the final shakeup. And yeah, even though it was a thrilling game and Chelsea got through, picking up the pieces, you're probably thinking, you know, what another crazy day for Chelsea, when it should really be celebrating back at Wembley. But it doesn't feel like that, if I'm honest.
Okay, Andy, you said you were at the Wolves currently game, weren't you? So that was another excellent game of football. I think what summed it up for me, that miss Ellis Sims had, where he sort of, it was played through, we had an open net and he missed it. And you think, oh, it's obviously not going to be Coventry's day. They're 1-0 up. They end up going 2-1 down late on it and somehow pull out two late goals in the limbs. I know people talk about limbs, but the limbs of that Coventry away end, when they got that third goal, it was banana seeing their fans go crazy. And to me, that's the magic of the FA Cup. It's just amazing to see how much it means to people when they get to this stage.
Yeah. I mean, it was superb. Obviously, you know, Coventry City, you know, the FA Cup played a big part in the history, of course, when the last time they got to a semi-final, obviously they went all the way and won it in 1987. And it's fantastic. Crossy mentioned before about the extra fans that you get, visiting fans that you get at FA Cup games. You know, that if you've been to Molineux, they have that entire stand. The face is the main stand, so down the touchline. And they were great all game, the Coventry fans. And I'm glad you mentioned Ellis Sims, because I was so pleased for him. That was a terrible miss. I suspect the VAR would have cancelled that out had he scored anyway, because I think the guy who had the original shot that came out to Sims was offside. But I don't know. But I was so pleased for him, because he's such a... I like him a lot, you know, and it didn't work out for him at Everton. And then I was so pleased he then somehow got the goal, the first goal that went in off I think his arm, and then got that equaliser late in stoppage time before, of course, that fantastic winner from Hadji Wright. But you know what? It was a brilliant game. It was just what I liked about him, what I like about, in a way, it was like yesterday, the FA Cup. I don't know whether teams changed their approach, but you know, we see so much now of the slow build from the back. We see, you know, quite careful, considered sort of build-ups and ball going back to the keeper back there. You know, all these passes that has become the really, really way to play. And yeah, this wasn't. This was just, I mean, it was old school. It was old school. You know, you attack, we attack, you attack, we attack. Wolves had some really good performances in there. You couldn't knock it. There was nothing. It was played in a great spirit. It was hard, but it was fair. A great old ground, of course, Molineux. And as I say, it had that element of the FA Cup that we like, which is, okay, not exactly a minnow, not exactly, you know, a David and Goliath type situation, but still a team that is not in the Premier League. And it's still nice to see a team not in the all-consuming Premier League go through to the semi-final. And again, you bring in that argument, don't you? It's funny because obviously I think most of us will write and talk about how it's such a shame that the FA Cup semi-finals are at Wembley, and you know that it should remain special to get to Wembley for the final. And we all say that. And we all think that it's, you know, there's some great venues for semi-finals. Yesterday's Old Trafford, for example, being one, et cetera, et cetera. And we all say that. But then, as I'm leaving the ground on Saturday, you know, Coventry fans are absolutely ecstatic that they're going to Wembley. You know, they really are. It's you know, we're going to Wembley. They're making the plans. They're singing about it. So it's a really tough one. You know, it's easy for us neutrals, so to speak, to say, well, you know, it devalues the FA Cup having the semi-finals at Wembley, but the fans are really, you know, Coventry now are absolutely cannot wait for, they'll make a weekend of it maybe, you know, so it's a tough one, but yeah, it was a great game. Again, it just set up the whole FA Cup weekend, didn't it, really, perfectly. And a good story with Mark Rutland as well. Not the story about having got a ball boy, but yeah.
I just want to say he got himself in trouble there at the end of the game. Yeah. You know, I've been sort of going for carnage, and I read an article on the Mirror Football website last week that the FA Cup final and the playoff final are on the same weekend, which is very interesting, with Coventry City potentially making the FA Cup final, and also, you know, I would suspect they've got a pretty strong chance of making the playoff final. They obviously got there last season. John, did you read this story about the two being on the same weekend and the issues of the Champions League final as well being at Wembley? Do you think it's almost in a way a bit disrespectful that they kind of ruled out a Championship team getting to a final when we even had Sheffield United in a semi-final last season. To me, it just seems strange that they didn't think about this.
Read it? Did I read it? I wrote it. How did you? Connor, yes, I did. Funny enough, I read it, yes, and I wrote it. And, look, when I wrote it, I've got to say, I thought this will never happen. And it was actually one of my wonderful sports news editor's ideas, actually. And he sort of was, that will never happen. And basically shows what I know. And basically, what it means is that basically the championship playoff final will have to be shifted. And it will be shifted. They've got, they've kept two potential dates free, and it will be moved depending on, kind of who gets there and what happens, basically, because obviously you've got the Champions League final to think about and who might be in, sort of kind of there and what have you. So, before and after, if you like, depending on the FA Cup, who might make it. So you've got that to take into account. So they've left two potential dates, but yeah, I like you, I think it more says a little bit more about kind of, what the game makers think might happen, and basically don't really give championship teams much of a chance of making the FA Cup final. And then of course you've still got to get Coventry into the playoffs for that to happen. And the way that Coventry have been going, and it's very, very tight and intense, isn't it, in the championship playoff places, if you look. So you've still got things to happen. But I tell you what, even last week when you thought that's remote, it's suddenly a possibility. It really is. And so, I think that's the joy of football, really. And I think it's the great shame that basically sometimes, as people have done in this situation, when you write people off, things happen. I mean, look at the final. Who's going to get to the final, for example? It's surely, you'd put your money on basically being an all-Manchester final again. But something will happen. I tell you what, I bet something happens and we don't get that repeat of that final, because so rarely happens, and an upset will happen and it'll be fantastic. And that's exactly the beauty and the unpredictability of the Cup.
I think there'll be some Coventry City fans looking at their wallet thinking, oh, if we have to do three Wembley trips, we're going to be short of a bit of cash. I mean, you kind of talked about their predictions for the semi-final, so we'll move on now to the relegation scrap. I love a relegation. I mean, being a Sunderland fan, you would think I wouldn't love a Premier League relegation scrap, because that was 10 years of my life, but I really love a Premier League relegation scrap. Andy, who do you think's still in trouble? You look at the bottom of the league, everyone's out of form, it's fair to say. Crystal Palace, I think, are the only ones, if you consider them in the scrap, they're the only ones to have won a game in the last five or six. So do you think Palace are in danger, or do you think it kind of ends at Brentford and everyone below Brentford's got a chance of getting relegated?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think Brentford are just about in it. I think you're right. I think Palace are okay. What is it now? 29 points. I think realistically, what you'd have to look at, if you're going to gauge it, you'd have to say what is the best that, say, Luton Town can hope for in terms of points total. I mean, and I would guess if they've got, what have they got at the moment? 22 after 29 games. So really working on that average, you would have thought that the best they're really going to get, I would have thought, is, I mean, I think they'd be, it'd be ambitious for them to get to 31, 32. So I think Palace are probably one win away, one or 4 points away, I would say Palace, 3 points or 4 points away from safety. And that is, a big ask for Luton even to get those points, in the run of form they're in. They have tailed off, it was a crushing defeat against Bournemouth, the nature of it. But I do think, and the teams immediately above them, what I would say is that I think I've seen Everton and Forest recently, and they're not on a great run, obviously. I mean, Everton, for example, it's 11 Premier League games, without a win. I think it's 6 defeats and 5 draws, or 5 defeats and 6 draws. I think it's one way around. And, I've seen them and I've seen Forest and I've seen them in this bad run of form. But when I've watched them and they played okay, I saw Forest, in that dramatic defeat to Liverpool in 99th minutes, and they played well. They should have got something from that game. I saw Everton at Old Trafford get beat 2-0, and they played okay, and they should have got something from that game. So I don't think either of those are in a run of form that's absolutely desperate. They are in terms of the results. So I think they'll have enough. Then, of course, I mentioned those two clubs. The added fact that comes in then of what happens when the independent commission decides what punishment they'll give for the breaches of the profits and sustainability rules.
Do you think, John, Burnley's survival chance? I mean, they wanted the week. I mean, they tried their best not to win, considering they're against 10 men. They weren't great, but they got to win. Do you think they are relying on a points deduction to have any chance of survival? Do you think they're waiting for this verdict to come this week on Nottingham Forest? Because I haven't seen enough from them this season to suggest that they could win, what, three or probably four of the last sort of nine games. It doesn't seem likely. Do you think they'll need to rely on the Premier League to drop a nice verdict in their favour?
Yeah, well, they absolutely are. And I'm still not completely convinced it'll be enough. I think clearly I admire Burnley for sticking with Vincent Kompany, and it's so unusual, isn't it? So unusual that a manager who's had such a wretched season has had no question marks about his future. And I actually think, do you know what? What a change, what a refreshing change. Because they've clearly admired what he's done, in getting them up in the Championship. I mean, you've got to learn from that. Because they'll, you know, I think they go down with Sheffield and then basically have to basically look at what they buy again. Because do look at what they spent last summer. They spent a lot of money last summer, and they have to improve how they spend. And they have to get Premier League ready. They have to get Premier League physicality. And I just don't think they've bought enough, really. So look, there's no way that I can see Burnley and Sheffield United getting out of it. I am surprised at pleasantly, in a way, their basic company hasn't had sort of kind of question marks. Fair play to them. They're sort of kind of building for the longer term, and you like to think they come back. Listen, I can't deny that I've developed a soft spot for Luton and Rob Edwards. What a great story. Brilliant to go there. I'd love to see them stay up, but then who's that at the expense of? You know, and so I think that Brentford just can't buy a win, but do I see them going down? No, because I think their quality and strength will see them getting up just enough. It's going to come down to, you know, I don't think Everton will, I think Everton will probably lose more points and still be okay, if I'm honest. And I think it's going to ultimately come down. I was working out my points earlier, and basically I think it's Luton or Forest. And I just feel, you know, that will be decided. And I do think it will be decided about how many points Forest lose. Really, are Luton going to get enough points to overtake them? That's the thing. They're brilliant at home. They never give up. They're so defiant. Rob Edwards is coaching a Championship team in all but name, by a couple of two or three players, and I think he does a great job. They're with him. But you can't lose 3-0 advantages at halftime at Bournemouth and basically had to win on Saturday. It feels like, I'm afraid to say, whatever happens with the other two, I still think Luton will probably go. I'd love to see them stay up, because I do think they represent, you know, sort of a bit of a fairy tale. People might disagree for various different reasons, but I quite like what the story is behind them. But ultimately, I do think, you know, sadly, it'll break my heart to see him go, because I do think the way they've invented Ross Barkley, for one, then crazy ground is another charming factor. And I just, ultimately, I think they'll probably go, if I'm honest.
Do you think, Andy, it's surprising to see, you know, normally the three Championship teams that come up, one of them generally excels and does all right. I think last season, all three stayed up as well. This season, the three that have came up, I think have been obviously worse than the other 17 teams in the Premier League. Even Luton, who I think done well, they've done well through character and, you know, the stadium and those factors, quality on the pitch, that they're clearly not at the same level. Are you surprised, you know, that the gulf is so big between them promoted teams and the rest of the league this season?
A little bit, but maybe not too surprised when I saw, you know, what happened in the summer in terms of, you know, Burnley did recruit and in a way, Burnley changed things in terms of personnel that I don't think worked. You know, Sheffield United sold their best player and, you know, Luton obviously were on a limited budget. Clearly, it's a case of you know, they're not going to be reckless in their spending, but then, you know, you need to invest to stay in the Premier League. So was I surprised? Only a touch, you know, only because, as you say, history suggests normally that one of the teams makes a better fist of it than any of these teams. Listen, Luton have done okay, but they really, you know, what Sheffield United and Burnley have done and not making a decent fist of staying up. Burnley have surprised me. They're the one of the three that have surprised me. I thought they would have made, I'm not saying, you know, they haven't put the effort in, but it just hasn't worked out at all with the way they play. They haven't changed the way they play. They've changed personnel, but not the way they play. So, yes, I am a little bit surprised. But then again, you know, what we're seeing now, the interesting thing is that, you know, three teams went down last year, have got a chance of coming back up next year. So that just shows you, in a way that you can be great in the Championship, but it is a big leap. Look at the teams that we're talking about, you know, down the bottom there. You know, I mean, look at the money that Nottingham Forest have spent to try and stay in the Premier League. So much money they're in trouble for it. You know, Everton over the last 5 or 6 years, the money they've spent, again, so much that they're in trouble for with the Premier League. So you're seeing these teams invest that sort of money and they're down there at the bottom. So it's a really big ask for the teams that are promoted to stay up if they don't invest heavily.
Okay, well, I think we're just about out of time here. Thanks, John. Thanks, Andy, for coming along. I presume you'll be at the England game this weekend. Is it Saturday evening, the England match? You got any quick predictions there? Do you think there'd just be a sort of, I suppose it's a friendly match, isn't it? So there's not much riding on the games, but do you think there's anything you're looking out for in particular heading into them games?
Oh, I'm looking out for Jude Bellingham in an advanced midfield role. That's what I'm looking out for. I'm looking for Phil Foden to play yet again and dispel this ridiculous myth that he's not at the front and centre of Gareth Southgate's plans. And two decent warm-up games. The one that I'm interested in, who's going to play the sort of kind of the other role alongside Declan Rice in midfield? Because I'll tell you what, that's a massive issue. And so pound to a penny, it's going to be Jordan Henderson.
I'm looking forward to seeing how many cry-offs there are this week. Having a sweep on that. I'm looking forward to Gareth Southgate seeing sense and actually calling Kobe Manu up into the senior squad. It's not going to happen, obviously. Obviously not going to happen, but listen, it is a friendly, but England-Brazil, isn't it? You know, and it will be a full house. You know, it's remarkable. Don't forget, whatever people say about international football, about the England team, there's no other nation, well, there's very few other nations, will draw the sort of crowd that England will get for a friendly game next Saturday night.
Yeah. What do you make of Ben White, actually, before we go? Ben White, what do you make of that decision?
Oh, I just, yeah, I mean, honestly, I thought it was ridiculously choreographed last week. Schmaltzy Arsenal, you know, contract announcement, and then basically to try to spike this sort of kind of, because, you know, Arsenal clearly knew that, you know, Southgate was going to get asked about it, and he duly was. I think it's a ridiculous situation, which is impossible to, you know, impossible to solve, really. He's clearly, you know, playing the best football of his life, deserves to be in the squad. And there's just no way back under Southgate, under him. You can't pull out of an England squad and then kind of get back in, I don't think, under that manager. So, you know, there's obviously issues sort of behind the scenes, and he doesn't, I'm honestly not completely convinced he really wants to play for England, no matter who is in charge. And frankly, that's his right, isn't it? You know, so not every player's a couple from the same. I think it's disappointing when they pull out, but, you know, really, do we have to have one-size-fits-all players? I think that's the thing, you know. And also, does he really fit the Southgate mould? He does brilliantly for Arsenal with that Saka link-up. Can you replicate that at club level? I'm not sure he can. You know, Walker would probably start. Does he really want to go to another tournament, not be first choice? Of course he doesn't. So, you know. So, look, ugly, unappetising, not great look, but ultimately, yeah, we move on. You know, it was a bizarre one, incredible talking point, because you can't turn your back on England.
Yeah, I think it's once a week in Spain, doesn't he? I think it also finished on the Tuesday night, didn't it? So, I mean, what would you rather? Play pointless friendlies, have yourself some nice sunshine. Anyway, thanks guys for joining with us this morning. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next time.